back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We're going to be at G&A Coney Island Hot Dog in White Marsh, no longer in Highland Town after a few generations. Andy, move the restaurant out to the county, and I've been meaning to get out there. I'm going to have some Raven scratch-offs to give away from the Maryland Lottery holiday cash drop, as well as a few remaining Raven scratch-offs. We're still remaining in season at this point. Also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You give them a call. You buy two, you get two free. And 0% financing. I always make this guy, like, he comes in sometimes when the Ravens are good. And back when I was a real journalist, we'd see each other. He's famous 10 years ago since he utilized the dancing on the edge of chaos. I welcome back the great Jason Cole, now of OutKick, formerly of a lot of places, but has always written great books, including one on John Elway in recent years. How are you, my friend? Happy playoff, happy Super Wild Card weekend to you, Jason Cole.
I am fantastic, Master. How are you doing?
Well, not headed to Cincinnati to eat the late night chili here this weekend, but certainly in regard to Lamar and in regard to this game and this franchise, and you've been at this since back before Purple Rain won, covering the National Football League. This is a pickle of a circumstance all the way around with negotiating, with where Deshaun Watson's contract was and where his injuries are and where his talents lie and where the tax situation in Florida might lie. And then they got to go win a playoff game on Sunday night, and nobody knows whether he's going to play or how he would play. And certainly these last couple of weeks have been a weird time to be around the Ravens and asking John Harbaugh questions.
Yeah, it's when you don't know what's going on with your quarterback, you kind of don't know what's going on with your entire organization, right? That's how important that player is. And as of now, it's unclear. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Does it behoove him to play, right? And if you're Lamar Jackson, and if you're not completely healthy, and you already have a reputation, one of the things that you're criticized for is that you're not good in the playoffs. If you go out in this game and you're not good in the playoffs, how much are you hurting your value and confirming a reputation when you don't necessarily have control over it? Or do you take that head on and say, I'm going to fight this and be ready and do whatever I have to do. We're going to go win a game in Cincinnati, even though we're not probably not as good as the Bengals at this point in time, and I'll prove to everybody that I'm worth the money. I think that the wise counsel, and unfortunately Lamar Jackson does not have counsel, he just has himself and his mother and a few other people. He does not have wise counsel would tell you to not play in this game. The danger in that is that if you don't play in this game, do you then take the reputation, because now you're back-to-back years where you've missed significant portions of the season, right?
Well, they didn't even get to this point last year. He didn't get to not play in a playoff game last year.
Right, right. And so, like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, I think, if you're Lamar Jackson. I hope he plays. Because I think he makes the game far more interesting. I think he gives them a chance to win. If he doesn't play, they don't win. They have no shot. Even if he does play, like, I just think right now the Bengals are the better team, you know, and by a pretty significant margin. Because if you look at the overall rosters favor the Bengals, and the matchups favor the Bengals.
Jason, you and I have been at this a long time. I mean, you've been a guest on my program at least 15 years. I've known you, and I always try to call you around playoff time because you do look at the whole league, and I love having you on and the wisdom you bring, into these circumstances. But I don't ever remember, and I've been on the air 31 years. I was talking playoff football before we even had a team here. I don't ever remember this week talking about whether a quarterback should or shouldn't play based on contract, long-term contract. Sometimes it's the backup, sometimes it's health, sometimes it's that. But I've never had anybody say the agent should be telling him not to play because there's no upside here for him in regard to performance. The only upside here is beat Mahomes the following week, beat Josh Allen next week, and he sort of knows he doesn't have the horses around him and peers. And you mentioned not having counsel. He doesn't not just have counsel. He doesn't have representation when the team is out telling NFL Network he'll be back on Christmas. And now it's January 10th and he's not back. And the coach is sort of hemmed and hawed that all of this has been for him, I guess, damaging to some point, but maybe damaging enough to get himself to someplace he wants to play in a tax circumstance where a Miami, Tampa, Nashville bidding war would get him the $250 million he wants. Somebody will give him that money, but I don't think it's going to be Steve.
No, I don't think it. Look, if the Ravens wanted to pay him, they would have paid him already. They don't want to pay him. I think they see the injury downside on him as a player. They see that, you know, once what was once fast will slow down. That's just how the NFL works. And he has not improved as a passer to the point where he's not a dangerous passer. He's a, you know, he's a good one. But also his performance against better defenses at playoff times, you know, and that we haven't seen that in a couple of years, but it has never been good, right? So these are all the downsides. The upside is that he makes you competitive. He's one of the most unique quarterbacks in the league. And I thought was worth paying a certain amount of money to, a healthy portion of money, $150, you know, close to $200 million guaranteed, because he gets you to the dance. And then the question is, do the circumstances once you get to the dance allow you to win a championship? You know, do Mahomes and Allen knock each other off and you get past Burrow in that one, and then you know, only have to beat one of those. You know, the problem is that it's not just Burrow, Mahomes, and Allen now. It's Burrow, Mahomes, Allen, and look what Trevor Lawrence is now doing, right? And look at what Justin Herbert's doing, right? And, the AFC is getting increasingly loaded with quarterbacks who are simply just better passers, better performers in the pocket and in normal situations than Lamar will probably ever be. Now, as far as the taxes go, where he ends up, will Miami bet on him? I don't know. I don't think he fits what Mike McDaniel is trying to do, but he would certainly get butts in the seats, right? He'd get people down in South Florida excited, right? Do you go to Tampa if Brady leaves? Again, he'd probably put butts in the seats and get people excited. He'd be worth the money from that perspective. Do you go to Nashville? I don't know that he's Vrabel's kind of quarterback, but if you pair Lamar Jackson with Derrick Henry for two years, oh man, are you mowing people down? You know, and again, you're winning enough games to get yourself into the playoffs. If you have that combination, you're probably not ruling the division because Jacksonville has Trevor Lawrence, but you're getting yourself in position to playoffs, and sometimes that's enough.
Jason Cole is here from OutKick. You can find him out on Twitter, anywhere great football books are written and served at this point. I'm with the wisdom you have in all of these drafts you've covered and resurrection projects for franchises that go from worst to first, and they draft their Trevor Lawrence or they draft their Joe Burrow or their Peyton Manning throughout all of this. The Ravens went a different way with Lamar, right? And saying we're going to zig when they zag. And I remember way back 5 years ago when Harbaugh called this an experiment, right? Because it really kind of was an experiment because nobody's won this way at this level. Maybe college fine, but not here with the RPO right. In the system. The notion that you're going to run into linebackers 160, 180, 220 times a year and stay upright and be healthy when we're drinking eggnog and celebrating the holidays and getting through New Year's and getting to the field. All these cats you write books about, the Elways, they all have one thing in common. They were all playing football games in January because they took care of their bodies, their teams took care of them. Every design of modern football was meant to protect the quarterback, not for the quarterback to seek contact, because the circumstances are one hit, one play, and you go from 8-3 to who's Tyler Huntley and who's this Anthony Brown guy, right? And your chances of winning are zero with your backup quarterback. And almost no matter who your backup quarterback is, other than Nick Foles and Jeff Hostetler over the course of history, right? Was this a bad idea for the Ravens, or was there a reason other teams
No, this is, look, sometimes you got to play with the hand you're dealt, right? And the hand you were dealt is you had a late round pick. You had an early second round pick. You had a value fall to you in a draft, and you made the most of that value and you took a shot with it, right? Look, and this is a game where only one out of 32, it's a totally dysfunctional measure of what success is, right? Because only one out of 32 are considered successful every year, right? The truth is the Ravens have been extraordinarily successful with Lamar Jackson as quarterback. They put themselves in a position to be competitive. They've done this. They've done, you know, extraordinary things on offense that are very entertaining, right? The problem is that the system doesn't last that long. The reasons that you talked about, which is running quarterbacks last that long in the NFL, guys who get 100 carries or more. There's only been a handful in the history of the league who've had more than two seasons with 100 carries. And I think that list is Cam Newton, Lamar Jackson, and maybe Michael Vick, right? Not even Russell Wilson had more than 100 carries twice in his career. You know, the other quarterbacks like the Elways, Steve Youngs, those guys, they learned eventually to not run. And they learned to play from the pocket. You know, that's just not Lamar's game. You know, you were hoping that he would progress to be a better thrower of the football. He's okay. He's not great. And for him to make the transition from being a running quarterback to being more of a pocket presence, he had to improve that throwing style. And it's just never really happened to the extent that you can be successful, in my view, in the playoffs. But what they tried overwhelmingly was A, smart, B, done with conviction. And I've said this to John Harbaugh, like they went all in to make this work for Lamar Jackson. Okay. In terms of designing your offense, you know, getting a tight end, getting a good tight end, doing all of these things, they try to make it work. The reality is that, look, it doesn't. You know, defensive players are big and strong and ugly and fast and nasty, and they knock your quarterback around, and he gets hurt. And if you're going to play this style, your quarterback is going to get hurt. That's just the way it's going to be. It was true when Bobby Douglas was doing it back in the 1960s, and most of your listeners are probably going to go, Bobby who?
I remember Bobby Douglas at the Chicago Bears.
Exactly. But very few people do. Why? Because he had like one season like this and got the crap knocked out of it. Okay. And most guys get the crap knocked out of it. It doesn't work long term. That's all.
Jason Cole is here. You know, the other side of this is how, to your point, full conviction, changing the offense, bringing in Roman, we're gonna RPO, we're gonna zig, they're gonna zag, all of that. Then you have to get wide receivers, right? So whether it's drafting Hollywood Brown, who falls in love with the quarterback and still wants off the island because he wants to be paid and he wants the ball more, they sign the Willie Sneeds of the world to crack down and block, and this is an attractive place for a blocking wide receiver, but that's like a jumbo shrimp, right? Like there's no such thing as a blocking wide receiver. They all want to catch the ball. They were never going to throw the ball a lot here. That never made it attractive. And then they draft Bateman and he gets injured. So the recruitment of the wide receiver in this mystery offense that catches 12 balls a week and is the Antonio Brown or the difference maker wide receiver in an offense where you don't want to throw the football 30 times, you know?
Well, I mean, yes. But some of the reason that you don't want to throw the ball 30 times is that you realize the quarterback, when you do that, is if you throw the ball 30 times, how many of those are going to be erratic throws that get picked, right? Because he hasn't learned how to be a better thrower, all right? Some of this is on Lamar. Some of this is on them. But a lot of it is on Lamar, because Lamar has stubbornly believed that he's a good thrower of the football, and he's not. He's not a terrible thrower. He's not Tim Tebow. Don't get me wrong. Tim Tebow was a terrible thrower of the football in ways that matter in pro offenses. Lamar is not a great one. So that is why Lamar is one of the most unique players in the history of the game, because he is good enough in regular season situations to make you competitive and get you into the playoffs. He is not good enough at throwing the football to be a guy that you lean on to throw it 30 to 35 times a game, and then in playoff situations depend on him to make critical third and six, third and seven, third and eight throws that require an ability to manipulate the ball and put it in certain, in tight windows that are just really, really difficult. So he's an incredibly unique player. And he's the kind of player who, depending on if I'm coaching a football team, I would pay him money. I'd pay him pretty good money. In fact, I might even, if I'm the Ravens, I might franchise him after this year. If I think that he's actually going to show up and put his heart into it and keep him on a one-year deal, he's not going to like that, and he's going to be resistant to it. But I might be willing to do that, to say, take another shot with this.
Why wouldn't he just say, trade me to wherever you're trading me, wherever they're going to give me guaranteed money?
He probably will. The problem that you don't know, and this is the wild hair in the situation, is that he does not have counsel. He doesn't have an agent. He doesn't have representation to help guide him through this. So a lot of these decisions are made purely on, Deshaun Watson's making that kind of money. I deserve what Deshaun Watson got. You have to learn how to massage that to get what you want. And the other side of it is, again, we talk about these other teams wanting him. And again, I think there's probably a fair number of teams that would want him because he makes you competitive. Do you want to also pay him $230 million and commit that to him? That's where teams go, wait a second. Because those guarantees, those big guarantees, Deshaun Watson didn't play very well this year in Cleveland. Russell Wilson did not play well in Denver. Kyler Murray did not play well in Arizona after getting these gigantic contracts.
Kirk Cousins is still trying to prove himself and has next week to do it, right?
Well, I mean, he's on a shorter-term deal, and it's not quite as exorbitant. But look, Kirk Cousins is what he is. He's just a mediocre quarterback. He's not special. The other guys, Deshaun Watson has special talent. Russell Wilson has proven to be a special player over the course of his career. He earned that. Kyler Murray.
I just remember Cousins got guaranteed money that he didn't. He was not top of class.
It was not $200 million. It was $80 million, and then a second contract with another. We're talking $200 million, the kind of money where it's like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers got a contract. You can't cut him. You can't move on. You can't change your roster and affect change, even if you want to. And that's what the Deshaun Watson deal, the Russell Wilson deal, the Aaron Rodgers deal, the Kyler Murray deal, all of those deals say, I am married to this quarterback no matter what. And maybe it'll work out. You know, again, Deshaun Watson, after a year, half of a season to come back and play, he may regain his ability to get sharp again. Russell Wilson may figure it out with whoever the next coach is. Kyler Murray may get healthy. Who knows? Lamar Jackson, Baltimore doesn't want to get into that kind of contract. And I'm not sure who else will at this point in time want to get in on that contract because for all the things that Lamar Jackson is great at, there are a couple of things he is not great at, which you have to figure out how to overcome, because he hasn't figured out how to overcome them yet.
Part of that's having a core around him, and we're going to figure that out this weekend. Jason Cole is here. He is JasonCole62 out on Twitter. You can find him at Outkick as well, covering the National Football League as well as anyone, including his books on things, John Elway, as well as from time to time sharing some dietary recipes and tips and great things to eat along life's highway.
Dietary, well. No. Great food, I can tell you about great food. Dietary, you might want to go to somebody else.
Well, you know, Springsteen's on tour, right? And now that I've been thrown out of the league, I get to go around to places like Tampa, Atlanta, Houston, Austin. Yeah, I'm going to go see Bruce a little bit. So I'm out on the road. Maybe I will be reaching back to you. Last thing for you, though, as we enter the playoffs, yeah. Give me your favorite story looking at these playoffs and where you go. There's a storyline in every one of these cities, but where are you looking to say, beware this team making a championship game 2 weeks from now?
Well, it's San Francisco. I mean, you know, I mean, everybody knows about the defense, although the defense has had some hiccups. Like, they give a ton of points to the Raiders and Jarrett Stidham. And they've had these moments where they gave up a 77-yarder to A.J. Green. They gave up a 75-yarder against Miami and Brent Sherfield. So they've had some hiccups here occasionally, right? But they got a lot of talent on defense, right? But Brock Purdy, like, you talk about a kid who can process and knows answers to what he's supposed to do. And he's not super talented, right? Like, he would not win any kind of athletic contest against the Mahomes of the world, the Rodgers of the world, the Lamar Jacksons of the world. He would never look spectacular in that way. He looks more like a guy who's playing quarterback on your intramural football team, right? You know, I mean, he's 6 feet tall, not, you know, but he is a special talent in terms of processing information on the field and getting you into the right play and adjusting to make plays work. He's surrounded by cogs that fit perfectly with what he wants to do. You know, the tight end in Kittle, they got Samuel back. He's made Ayuk a 1,000-yard receiver and really a dangerous guy with, you know, the over-the-middle throws, and he's got McCaffrey to feed the ball to, either handing it to him or throwing him screens, right? Like, they're really fascinating. Now, is that going to be good enough if they go and they play against, you know, assuming the Cowboys are really show up for a game and Micah Parsons can get in his grill and create havoc for him, how will he handle that? Or if you go to Philadelphia, right, and you have to go up against that really heavy front that they have, you know, the kid from Georgia that they brought in, they've got Fletcher Cox, and Ndamukong Suh is there now, Brandon Graham is a, you know, veteran with, you know, I mean, all of those guys could present physical problems for a guy like Purdy. Does he have an answer for that? I'm fascinated by his story. Now, obviously, there are some other highlight matchups. You know, Justin Herbert against Trevor Lawrence in the first round of the playoffs is awesome, right? The collection of quarterbacks who exist in the AFC. The Lamar Jackson story that we've talked about, you know, ad infinitum. Does Tom Brady have another run in him left? But the fresh face, interesting, fascinating story to me is Brock Purdy. And does this kid have enough to get the 49ers through it and to win a championship? You know, does he have four games in him to get them through this? Is that good enough? And I'm waiting to see it pan out. I want to see that one pan out because this is along the lines of Kurt Warner coming out of Iowa cornfields, right? You know, some combination of Field of Dreams meets football, right? That's the kind of thing that Brock Purdy is to me.
You've been around the game so long, but they never made deals in season. The McCaffrey deal, as well as Roquan Smith here, difference-making kind of things. We always talked about in baseball at the trading deadline. I know you're a baseball guy too, and yeah, how rarely it makes a difference. Certainly for the 49ers, Brock Purdy wouldn't be Brock Purdy had they not acquired McCaffrey.
Jimmy Garoppolo would have been Jimmy Garoppolo without Christian McCaffrey. The McCaffrey deal is a huge one along the way too, no question about it. But I'll just say this: they went from starting Trey Lance in the first game to then going to Jimmy Garoppolo, to then going to Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick in the draft, a rookie starting at quarterback. And they're better now with him starting at quarterback than they were in the first 11 games. They're averaging 33 points a game with Brock Purdy. They averaged 22 points a game in the first 11 with the combination of Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance. That tells you everything you need to know about what's going on here. Purdy's having a special run. Is it long-term? I have no idea. But for right now, this story fascinates me.
It helps to have a beautiful mind, doesn't it? Right? That's why you went to college where you went, not the other place, right?
Look, but it's beyond that. It's a beautiful mind is a wonderful thing. Does it operate fast enough? Like I did a story about this kid, this company out of Nashville that tested his cognitive ability. And they said his cognitive ability, I'm not talking about his physical ability, his cognitive ability is on a level with guys like Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Josh Allen. He's not a thrower of the football like those guys. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's not going to sit back and throw one off of his back foot 50 yards downfield. It doesn't happen that way. He can't. But in terms of processing things, his ability to focus is on line with Drew Brees. Okay. I mean, we're talking about guys who are top level all pros, guys who are changing the game right now, if not Hall of Famers. He has that kind of cognitive ability. Physical ability, meh. Okay. Cognitive ability. Hey, look, when you can make decisions like that, it's like I sat with Belichick one night, doing an hour-long discussion with him. It was like 11 o'clock at night in his office. And the one thing he said, he goes, the big arm's great, throwing it hard is great. He goes, but if you can't make decisions and you're not accurate with the football, nothing else matters. Make decisions, be accurate. Brock Purdy makes incredible decisions. He's incredibly accurate. For right now, that may be enough to get the 49ers through this and maybe, just maybe, win a championship.
Jason Cole is here. He will be there for you throughout the playoffs. You can follow along out on the Twitter thing as well as at OutKick. It's always good to see you. Always good to get your insights, which are always a little different than some other folks in the way they see the game because of all the stuff you've seen all these years. Wish us luck with this Lamar thing here, Jay. This too shall pass, right?
It's enjoy the ride. It'll be fun.
Are they dancing on the edge of chaos officially or no?
Oh, yeah, they're dancing on the edge. They are definitely dancing on the edge.
Jason Cole joining us here. I owe him a crab cake. We're going to be having a crab cake with my friend Andy over at GNA, Coney Island Hot Dog in White Marsh on Thursday. I'll have some Maryland Lottery scratch-offs to give away, as well as a big thanks to our friends at Window Nation for making it happen, 866-90-NATION, sponsoring the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Lucas in Owings Mills. The Ravens are headed to Cincinnati. Let you know if that's victory chilly or not right around the midnight on Sunday night. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Ravens playoffs and BaltimorePositive.com.